My friends, this is Dr. Beter. Today is April 30, 1982, and this is my audio letter number 74. It's now been almost 1 month since war broke out in the South Atlantic. On the surface, it seems that it's only a dispute between Argentina and Great Britain over the barren, windswept Falkland Islands and South Georgia Island. In reality, it's far more than that. The so-called Falklands crisis is just a visible tip of a giant military operation. During this month of April 1982, fierce naval battles have taken place, not only in the South Atlantic, but also in the South Pacific. Up to now, most of the hostilities have been kept under wraps by wartime censorship on all sides. But as I say these words, the naval war in the Southern Hemisphere is about to come to the surface. Beginning today, April 30, a total naval and air blockade of the Falklands by the Royal Navy has begun. At the same time, a counter-blockade has been declared by Argentina in the same area. To be effective, a blockade must be imposed over a period of time. But the Royal Navy does not have that much time. Winter is coming on in the South Atlantic, and the British supply lines are overextended. Having come this far, Her Majesty's Navy cannot simply drop the blockade and sail away in a few weeks' time without drawing blood from Argentina. As a result, the British will be forced to undertake military operations very soon, no matter how risky they may be. There is also another reason why the Royal Navy now has no choice but to engage the Argentine forces in combat. That reason, my friends, is that the Royal Navy has already suffered losses in secret combat this month. Up to this moment, there would be no way to explain away the damage which has been sustained by the British fleet. Only when publicly admitted fighting erupts will the British dare to admit that they have suffered battle losses. To obtain that cover story, the British have no choice but to sail into combat. But in doing so, they will be risking even heavier losses on top of those already sustained. In short, my friends, Her Majesty's Navy has sailed into a trap. The events now unfolding in the South Atlantic carry strange, ironic echoes of the past. For weeks now, we've been hearing countless commentators referring to the British task force as an armada, quote-unquote. The British, of all people, ought to be very uneasy with that description. The original Spanish Armada 400 years ago was renowned as a seemingly invincible fighting force. But it came to grief in a naval disaster so complete that it changed the course of history. And it was none other than the English Navy that destroyed the Spanish Armada. The original Spanish Armada put to sea in 1588, during the reign of England's Queen Elizabeth I. The Armada was an invasion fleet, carrying thousands of crack fighting men to invade England. They were met by the daring sea dogs of Sir Francis Drake. Drake and his small, fast ships turned the tables on the Spanish Armada by changing the rules of battle. The English fleet was equipped with new, longer-range guns, and it stayed upwind and out of reach. From there, the English pounded, smashed, and shattered the big ships of the mighty Armada. When it was all over, barely half the Spanish fleet was left to lip back to port. Drake's defeat of the Spanish Armada was a shock to the world. It opened the door for England under Queen Elizabeth I to start its expansion into a truly global empire. Today, 400 years later, history seems to have come full circle. Queen Elizabeth II is witnessing the dismantling of the world empire whose heyday began under Queen Elizabeth I. And now, the cultures of England and of Spain are once again in confrontation. Once again, a so-called armada is preparing for invasion, but this time the armada is British, not Spanish. 400 years ago, Sir Francis Drake was the hero of the day. Today, the ghost of Francis Drake is once again on the scene. The South Atlantic War Zone is at the eastern end of the Drake Passage around the southern tip of South America. The defeat of the Spanish Armada 4 centuries ago broke the back of Spain's naval supremacy. And now, the defeat of the new British Armada may well break the back of what remains of the once glorious Royal Navy. My 3 special topics for this audio letter are Topic number 1, the military secret of South Georgia Island. Topic number 2, the secret naval war of the Southern Hemisphere. And Topic number 3, the Rockefeller Fear Campaign against nuclear war. Topic number 1. When the Falkland Islands crisis began early this month, it looked at first like a tempest in a teapot. For a century and a half, since 1833, the islands have been controlled by Great Britain. During that entire time, British sovereignty over the Falklands has been disputed by Argentina. There have been countless threats by Argentina to seize the islands, which it calls the Malvinas. But the threats have always come to nothing in the past, and Britain has never even gotten very worried about them. The islands are 4 times as distant from Argentina as Cuba is from the United States, and they are not much of a prize. After 150 years of occupancy, the Falklands are home to fewer than 2,000 British settlers and a lot of sheep. In short, the remote Falkland Islands hardly looked like something to fight over. And yet, here we are, watching another crisis take place. We are watching as war erupts between Great Britain and Argentina. The Thatcher government is acting as if it has forgotten all about its usual preoccupation with a Soviet threat at NATO's doorstep. Instead, Britain is throwing almost everything it's got at Argentina. Aircraft carriers, cruisers, destroyers, submarines, assault ships, you name it. Luxury cruise ships have even been commissioned and turned into troop carriers overnight. Wave after wave of additional assault troops have been activated and sent to join the fleet even after it sailed. Ships and submarines have been pulled off station from normal NATO duty and sent to reinforce the task force. The initial 40-ship force has grown steadily over the past several weeks into an armada numbering over 70. Over 2/3 of the entire Royal Navy has already been deployed to the South Atlantic off Argentina. Watching all this, a lot of people are asking, what's this fight really all about? The most popular answer suggested in the major media is oil. Vast deposits of oil are known to exist under the continental shelf between Argentina and the Falklands, but that has been known for nearly 10 years. In no way does it explain the timing of the sudden military offensive by Argentina this month, and oil explains even less about the Argentine seizure of South Georgia Island. South Georgia Island is 800 miles east of the Falklands, with no known oil deposits anywhere near it. And compared to South Georgia, the Falklands are an island paradise. South Georgia Island is covered with rugged mountains, treacherous valleys, glaciers, and semi-permanent snow. Most of it is uninhabitable. On top of all that, Argentina has absolutely no legal or historical claim to South Georgia Island. In that respect, it stands in sharp contrast to the Falklands. In the early 1830s, the Falklands were occupied for a while by Argentine colonists. In 1833, the British expelled them and took over the island. For that and other historical reasons, Argentina argues that the Falklands really belong to Argentina, not Britain. But no such argument is possible for South Georgia Island. It has always been controlled by Britain, never by Argentina or Spain. The Argentine seizure of South Georgia Island looks even more unreasonable from a military point of view. Argentina's leaders are military men, and they think in military terms. They were well aware ahead of time that far-off South Georgia Island could not possibly be held for long. By seizing it, they were setting themselves up to absorb a military defeat as the island was retaken by Britain. So the question is, Why did Argentina's military junta bother with a seemingly worthless South Georgia island at all? My friends, the answers to all these questions are military, not political or economic. South Georgia Island possesses an enormous military secret. It's a giant underground installation buried under the mountains at the northwest end of the island. The real reason for the so-called Falkland crisis is this secret installation, together with two other similar installations, which I will describe shortly. The secret military complexes have been in existence for many years. They are not new. What is new is the accelerated nuclear war timetable of the American Bolshevik war planners here in Washington. For the past 2 months, I've been reporting the details of this new war plan to you as quickly as I can obtain and verify them. The plan calls for Nuclear War I to erupt by September of this year, 1982. It is this fast-approaching nuclear war threat that caused the so-called Falklands crisis to erupt now. What is going on now is a coordinated effort to spoil part of the Bolshevik grand strategy for the coming nuclear war. The mutual enemies of the American Bolsheviks here, namely the Rockefeller cartel and Russia's new rulers in the Kremlin, are behind the present crisis. They are trying to ruin Phase 3 of the Project Z war plan, which I revealed last month. That phase is to be world domination by the American Bolsheviks after both Russia and the United States have been destroyed in Nuclear War I. As I mentioned last month, the key to this plan is the existence of secret weapon stockpiles in various places around the world. The American Bolshevik military planners here in America are working with other Bolshevik agents in key military positions of other countries to set off war. Having done that, they intend to ride out the nuclear holocaust they have caused, safe and cozy in government war bunkers. When the warring nations finally lie smoldering and exhausted, the Bolsheviks will leave the shattered remains of their host countries. They will rendezvous at the secret weapons installations and bring their weapons into the open. They will confront the world with the only remaining fresh, up-to-date, powerful military force on Earth. And using that military power, they will become the undisputed rulers of the world. That is, they plan to do all this, and they plan to pave the way for world domination very soon by setting off Nuclear War I in a matter of months. The Rockefeller cartel and Russia's new anti-Bolshevik rulers are working together in a race against time to try to head off the Bolshevik war plan. Last month I mentioned that the Bolsheviks here are benefiting from war preparations which were started by the Rockefellers long ago. It has only been about 3 years since the Rockefellers were dislodged as the prime movers of the United States government by the Bolsheviks. Since that time, the United States government has been a house divided, torn by internal power struggles between rival Bolshevik and Rockefeller factions. But before that, the United States had been dominated for decades, both economically and politically, by the four Rockefeller brothers. In 1961, the brothers launched a new long-range plan for world domination. It was a two-pronged strategy, half visible and half secret, which I first described long ago in Audio Letter 28. It was a plan for the United States to arm to the teeth in secret while appearing to disarm gradually. Without repeating all the details, the basic idea was grandiose yet simple. By deliberately appearing weak, the Rockefeller-controlled United States would maneuver itself into a nuclear war with Russia. Then the secret weapons, including super weapons, would be unleashed to smash Russia and take over the world. When they set the grand plan in motion in 1961, the Rockefeller brothers were looking ahead to a nuclear war by the late 1970s. Their military analysts concluded very early that the war being planned would have very different effects on the northern and southern hemispheres. Both superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union, are located well up in the northern hemisphere. So are the other full-fledged nuclear powers, Great Britain, France, Red China, and India. By contrast, the strategic targets for nuclear war in the southern hemisphere are relatively few and far between. In other words, it was expected that the coming nuclear war would be essentially a northern hemisphere war. In an all-out nuclear holocaust, it is known that serious radioactive fallout will gradually spread to affect even areas not initially hit by war. But there are limits to how far the war clouds can spread. It was discovered long ago that there is very little mixing between the air of the northern and southern hemispheres. In the northern half of our planet, cold air from the North Pole works its way southward towards the equator. Then it works its way back to the north as warm air. A mirror image of this process takes up the southern half of the planet. Northern and southern hemisphere air meet in the equatorial zone, but very little of the air changes places. The military conclusion, my friends, is this. The coming nuclear war could ruin large areas of the northern hemisphere for generations to come. But if the calculations are right, the southern hemisphere could escape virtually unaffected by the war. This was music to the ears of the four Rockefeller brothers. A quick look at the globe of the world shows why. The Rockefeller cartel has dominated Latin America ever since World War II. As I discussed in my very first monthly audio letter, Nelson Rockefeller solidified the cartel grip on Latin America during the war. He accomplished this as so-called coordinator of hemispheric defense for then-President Franklin D. Roosevelt. So that takes care of the South American continent and its natural resources. Then there is the African continent. There, too, Rockefeller control was already in effect over wide areas of black Africa, especially south of the equator. All this was thanks to the efforts of John D. Rockefeller III, as I detailed in Audio Letter 36. Looking around the globe, the most important remaining land masses from the standpoint of world domination are Australia and New Zealand. Thanks to World War II, both were wide open to the Rockefellers. The Rockefeller brothers decided to establish secret military installations in the Southern Hemisphere for use after the coming war. By this means, they expected to become the masters of the surviving southern half of planet Earth after the Northern Hemisphere War. Then, as the Northern Hemisphere gradually recovered from the nuclear holocaust, the Rockefeller Empire would be able to pick up the pieces. In this way, the third-generation Rockefeller brothers expected their family dynasty to inherit the earth. In order to control the Southern Hemisphere militarily after the war, some means would have to be available to project military power onto any landmass. For example, revolts against Rockefeller domination would require troops, not a blast from the beam weapons on the moon. The most critical factor for post-war military domination of the world was found to be a navy. A minimum of 2 secret naval fleets would be required, one based in the South Atlantic, the other in the South Pacific. Since the reserve naval fleets were to be kept secret until after the Northern Hemisphere nuclear war, they could not be built in existing shipyards. New construction facilities had to be built, and they had to be hidden. To hide an entire shipyard is no small task. They take up a lot of space. On top of that, it was essential that the ships remain hidden after they were built. The best way to achieve that was to combine the shipyard and naval base into one overall secret installation. Finally, the secret naval installation had to be invulnerable to nuclear attack. Otherwise, if its existence were ever discovered prematurely, the secret navy might be wiped out. The combined requirements for secrecy, space, and protection against attack were formidable. But one day in 1959, While all these plans were still in their early stages of development, the answer presented itself. During a so-called banking trip to Sweden, David Rockefeller was given a tour of a unique hidden naval port. The port is hollowed out from solid granite cliffs, which come right down to the water. The entrance to the port is a gigantic hole in the side of the cliff, which can be sealed off with enormous steel doors. Inside this big doorway on the water, a huge cavity has been hollowed out to accommodate ships. The Rockefeller brothers and their military advisors decided that a bigger, more secret, better protected version of the Swedish hidden port was just what they wanted. A survey of candidate sites was then initiated. The site survey covered coastal areas throughout the southern hemisphere. Many areas were rejected very quickly because the topography was wrong. Other areas were rejected because they were too close to the equator. Still others had to be ruled out because there were too many people living nearby, making the desired level of secrecy impossible. Finally, it was essential that the sites chosen for the secret naval installations be totally secure politically. At last, the sites for the secret naval installations were selected. In the South Pacific, extreme southern New Zealand was selected. This is what I was alluding to in Audio Letter 71 3 months ago, when I called attention to New Zealand's extreme importance in the coming war. In order to obtain the necessary space, the secret New Zealand naval installation had to be divided up into two sites located close together. One is at the extreme southwest tip of South Island, where the mountain range known as the Southern Alps comes down virtually to the water's edge. The other part of the installation is built into the northwest tip of Stewart Island, which is off the tip of South Island. The Stewart Island facility is hollowed out within a rise known as Mount Anglem. The New Zealand location met all the requirements. Ever since World War II, the government of New Zealand has been tied even closer to the United States than to Great Britain. The location is far from the equator, and the installations are buried deep under mountains, protected from nuclear attack. They are also too deep to be reached by particle beam attacks, and the New Zealand site is well situated to command the entire South Pacific. In the South Atlantic, an even more perfect site was found. That site, my friends, is South Georgia Island. It is located perfectly for naval domination of the entire South Atlantic. The tall, rugged mountains provided a perfect location for the secret installation at the northwest tip of the 100-mile-long island. It is controlled by Great Britain, whose government, like that of New Zealand, was willing to cooperate. And South Georgia Island was virtually uninhabited, except for a whaling station on the northeast coast. The whaling station was some 50 miles away from the secret new installation which was being built, but Britain took no chances. In 1965, the whaling station was closed down. Since that time, there have been no inhabitants on South Georgia Island except for a few dozen alleged Antarctic scientists. Construction of the secret naval facilities, two in New Zealand, one on South Georgia Island, began in the early 1960s. The techniques were adapted from those used previously to build other large underground facilities, such as the NORAD installation inside Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado. However, these techniques were adapted in radically new ways to achieve construction access directly from the sea instead of overland. In this way, the sheltering mountain was left undisturbed in appearance, both during and after construction. The cuts in the mountainside, which were necessary to let ships in and out, were kept as small as possible and were well camouflaged. Like the Swedish hidden naval port arrangement, the entrances to the secret installations can be sealed up. When sealed, the entrance is virtually impossible to detect unless you know exactly where it is. and unlike most large construction projects, there are no tailings or piles of leftover rock lying around to attract attention. The man-made caverns which house the secret naval installations are enormous, but all the rock and debris was disposed of at sea. Once the secret naval facilities were built, they had to be outfitted for ship construction and dockside storage. The fake disarmament of the United States during the 1960s contributed greatly to this task. From 1961 to 1968, one man played a pivotal role in this elaborate Rockefeller scheme. He was then Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. All through the 60s, McNamara presided over the public paring back of America's visible military power. This included the closing down and dismantling of entire shipyards. What we were not told was where all that shipyard equipment went afterwards. Where it went, my friends, was to the new secret installations, which were being outfitted in New Zealand and South Georgia Island. The secret naval installations have been used as duplication facilities to reproduce certain ships and submarines designed and built here in the United States. As Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger told Congress recently, it is cheaper to build two ships at a time. That is especially true if the second ship is an exact duplicate of the first. This has become even more true in recent years through the use of computerized manufacturing techniques. The secret naval fleets, which have been built at the secret installations, are made up of duplicates, exact duplicates of certain other ships and submarines. They are all nuclear-powered, nuclear subs, nuclear cruisers, nuclear destroyers, and yes, nuclear aircraft carriers, three of them. A secret twin was built for the USS Nimitz, for the USS Eisenhower, and for the newly launched USS Carl Vinson. All have been financed through the gigantic cost overruns, so-called, that we constantly hear about in the Defense Department. And all three carriers have been provided with a full complement of aircraft, whose manufacture was financed the same way. The ships of the secret American Bolshevik naval fleets are all duplicates of other nuclear-powered vessels. Even so, the secret naval ships possess one key difference. Last month I revealed that the so-called stealth program has succeeded in developing a kind of electromagnetic invisibility shield. This technique makes an object invisible from a distance by distorting light waves in its vicinity. A whole new fleet of phantom warplanes are now going into crash production that use this principle. And, my friends, all of the secret American Bolshevik Navy ships have already been outfitted with similar stealth field equipment. The stealth principle is actually easier to apply to ships than to airplanes because there is more room for the powerful equipment that generates the field. After nuclear war I, the secret stealth navy of the American Bolsheviks would be light years ahead of any other navy left on Earth. It would be perfect for the intended role of world domination. The Rockefellers set it all in motion long ago, my friends. But 3 years ago, they lost control of the United States military. Now, it's the American Bolsheviks who are in control, and they are bent on war. These secret naval installations have precipitated what is being called the Falklands Crisis.